get about 100 women who care. Tell me how who put your name in the cap, in the hat, and tell the audience how that works.
So 100 Plus Women is an organization that tends to nonprofits. When I first went there 5 years ago, I went there, someone had told me about, actually it was cancer for women, and it interested me. So I went, and then I joined, and you have to pay $400 a year, quarterly, you give a donation. They, when you're a member, you get to put your name in a hat, they pull out three names, you get up there and speak about your program, and then everybody votes in the room, and they vote. If they vote for you, then the winner, everybody has to give that $100. And we started out with, 50 women. There's now 500 women. Hence, we just were the winner, which has put us on the map. You talked about how people don't find out about us and you've never heard of it for 10 years and nobody's even heard, even teachers. It's because we can't afford to have a billboard, right, or a name on the side of a bus. Advertising is crazy expensive, or a TV commercial. I so appreciate this radio broadcast. Mm-hmm. I so appreciate it because people will hear more how schools really do work. So 100 Plus Women just gave us an amazing donation, which will help us. I really need to have employees. We've worked as a volunteer-based organization for 10 years, but as we do grow, it's getting to be a lot more work. So that will help us to hire part-time people. Melissa has been hired as my assistant, and I couldn't do it without her. I didn't realize how much I needed her.
Tell anybody that's listening that wants to volunteer with you, tell them what they can do and where they can go.
So we take volunteers. They just have to send us an email. Our email is on our website, and we are on Facebook and Instagram also.
Give your email address.
Our email address is store, STORE, at T4teachers.org. And our website is the same. It's T4teachers.org. That's our website also.
So they can go on your website and they can sign up to be volunteers. And then what happens? Do you then have them come in for an interview to see if they make the fit?
They come in and see if they want to work this hard. Yes. we have them come in and check it out and see if they can really do it, because a lot of us, as I am myself, we're elderly and they can't pick up boxes. And it's just not for some people, but we do get a lot of volunteers. On our website, it also has a list of things that we need. It always has a list of things, and it's a mile long.
Okay.
And that's another way, instead of volunteering, just donating the goods that we need is a huge help. There is also a button on there for donations. It goes through PayPal, or they can write us a check. That helps us the most, because then we can get the things that we know we are short on.
Adrienne and Melissa, I cannot thank you enough for sharing your story with our listeners. I've learned so much as a result of this. I want to thank you so very much for joining me today. I'd like to tell my listeners to please visit us at boomgoddessradio.com. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, Boom Goddess Radio. And remember, love and kindness is never wasted. We will see you on the radio next week. And this is Jennifer signing off.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland.
It's time to make your voice heard and your impact matter. Join us for our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive and support grassroots media by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give to help us reach our $45,000 goal by September 20th.
Good morning, this is Disability Justice, an everyday pursuit and survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
And Dina Wilder, board operator.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. If you ever want to donate, you can donate by going to KBOO's website and click on the donate button.
Please introduce yourselves and tell us what your role in the organization is and how long you have been in that organization.
Yeah, I'll start. So I'm Brent Watkins, and I am the interim executive director for the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities. And it's almost been 1 year to the day.
Yeah, and my name is Matt Sears. I'm the public policy director here at OCDD. And in that role, I help oversee our advocacy work in the state legislature and also with state government agencies. And I've been here with the organization since June of 2024, so I'm also pretty new. And I'm really happy to be here, John. Thanks for having us on.
I thought it was a good idea that people know who Oregon Council on Disabilities, on Developmental Disabilities is.
You got it.
And the people who work for them. Which kind of leads into the second question is what led you to those roles and or this field, and how did you get into it? So can you all tell us a little bit about your past, I guess?
Yeah. So I'm going to do a little variation on this. So let me tell you a little bit about the history, but the part about how did you get into the field, the variation I'm going to give you is why I stayed in the field. But to begin with, it's almost been 30 years now for me. So I actually started working in the developmental disability community in Utah and was there for about a year and a half. And it's where I met my wife at an agency there. And I was a house manager for a home that we supported there, and a number of people. It was more of a supported living sort of concept than group home. And so there were people that had individual homes or apartments, and I used to help them with planning their week and their budgets and different things like that. And we had staff that would come in and provide some supports to help people get to the places they needed to go. And then we moved to Oregon, and I went to work for an organization called Partnerships in Community Living and worked there for 10 years. And when I left, I was the director of their residential services, and then came to work for the state of Oregon and worked there with the Office of Developmental Disability Services until I came to work for OCDD, or the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities. But there was a point in time that right toward the end of my time with PCL, so Partnerships Community Living, often goes by their acronym PCL. And it's kind of an interesting story where my wife and I had gone to see a movie. We went to see the movie Hairspray. And I had just completed my master's in business administration, was really considering some employment outside of the developmental disability community. You know, I thought making more money was more important at the time than what I was making. And there were some opportunities outside of that. And there was a moment at the movie that will stick with me for the rest of my life. So hopefully I won't get too emotional here. But there's a scene in which Queen Latifah is leading a group of people, sort of a nighttime vigil. And as they are marching in protest, she sings a song called I Know Where I've Been. And I just started to cry. And it was a moment I realized I was doing what I was intended to do, that the skills and abilities that I had were best served in the service of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and really that my life work was around standing in solidarity with them in dealing with the injustices that people with developmental disabilities deal with every day. And I've never looked back. It was a defining moment in my life, and I'll be here forever for that reason.
And trust me, we suffer a lot of injustices. All right. So same question to you, Matt. What led you into this field? How did you get in here?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great story, Brent. I appreciate you sharing that with everybody. For myself, I began working in the field of disability rights about 10 years ago and started off with an organization called Disability Rights Oregon, or DRO. I'm an attorney by training, and I found that's pretty useful when you're analyzing public policies, because really to understand the impacts of these laws on people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, first you have to understand the law. So that's been very, very helpful. But if you reach back even further, I originally had an interest in areas like social work. I always was curious about the law profession, but particularly homelessness issues. And when I was graduating from undergrad, I had the opportunity to work at a homeless shelter in Anchorage, Alaska. And that's not a place that's a very safe place to be unsheltered. And I learned a lot at that homeless shelter. And one of the things that I learned is how prevalent disability is in that homeless population. And it made me become more interested in mental illness and other disabilities. And I've always been a strong proponent of civil liberties. But when I thought about social work versus the legal profession, I was drawn to the law because through law, you can really make a lot of systemic change. And that really appealed to me. So the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities, or OCDD, really combines all of those ingredients into a pretty perfect sauce for myself. I get to advocate for the rights and liberties of people with disabilities, and I really enjoy that work.
Who mandated that there need to be an Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities?
So there's a council in every state. The Councils on Developmental Disabilities are required under federal law. There was a law called the DD Act, or the Developmental Disability Act. And that law goes all the way back to the 70s, and it really emphasized advocacy, capacity building, and systemic change for people with IDD through this type of council structure. Over time, that role has really expanded. It's become more about promoting rights and promoting full participation of people with disabilities in the community. And you could reach back even further than the 70s. I mean, really, in reality, it began even further than that, because it was really a federal movement that was started in the 1960s with JFK. Some of the things that we've been really instrumental in doing are councils have helped close institutions across the country that house people with disabilities. We've also helped promote competitive integrated employment, and we're continuing to shape policies every day.
How do you do the advocation that you've been doing?
We have a lot of relationships with other disability organizations, like the Oregon Self-Advocacy Coalition, or OSAC, Disability Rights Oregon, the DD Coalition, the Disability Health and Employment Equities Coalition, or the DHEEC. There are lots of community-based organizations that are doing good work for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and we work alongside them. And to help make those systemic changes, we engage with policymakers like legislators and state government officials. And our job is to educate them about how their policies are going to impact people with IDD.
Matt gave a really thorough response, and I would add one thing to that, which is, and also relying on the experiences of our membership. It's important to understand a little bit about how we're composed. So 60% of our membership, and Matt referenced federal law, so every state is required to have a council through federal law. It's something called the Developmental Disabilities Act, or the DD Act. And part of that DD Act requires that the composition of each of our councils be made up of 60% of individuals with lived experience or developmental disabilities, and parents that have children with developmental disabilities, and it's like a third, the final third of that can be a mix, but it can also be family members of people with developmental disabilities. So why is that? That's because those are people that have they're experiencing the systems, right? They understand the gaps in the system. They understand what needs to change. And then we're also really fortunate that we have
partners, and Matt mentioned many of the partners. You know, Disability Rights Oregon is one of our partners. Our University Centers of Excellence for Developmental Disabilities are our partners. We have brokerages and representation, and we have community disability, developmental disability programs, our CDDPs represented there, and we have other community entities and partners, vocational rehabilitation, you know, and there's others that I'm missing. So if they happen to be watching this, I apologize that I'm not giving the entire list here, but I'm just trying to give a sample of Department of Education is another one as I start to process through all of these. But we have professional people with professional experience that can bring their expertise to our council. And then we, of course, primarily have individuals and family members that really provide the insight that we need in order to be able to work with legislators, to be able to understand what connections we need to make and so forth. You know, the other thing that we have to do in terms of our composition or that's important as we represent Oregonians with developmental disabilities is that we need to remember that we represent all Oregonians with developmental disabilities, which means we need to make sure that we've got representation from people that are in Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, the I-5 corridor, as we often refer to it, and in different parts of Oregon, that we represent disabilities and different types of disabilities that people experience, and also racial and ethnic representation, so that all of our all voices and people that have different experiences in our community are all represented, because they all have a different experience with how disabilities impact them in their communities or because of their culture or their disability. And so all of those things are important to the question about who are we, you know, and what is it that we do.
That just sounds huge. And from what I've seen, there's only three of you. I mean, there's you, Brent, and you, Matt, and then there's Hannah. How in the world can you guys manage a whole state? I mean, with just the three of you, how in the world can you manage the whole state? Or is there more than just the three of you?
Yeah, so there we have two other really important people on our team. And everyone, I don't think you could say one role is more important than the other. Every person on our team plays a vital role in our success. And so the other two are Joanne Reganathan, and she is responsible for our community outreach. She's the person, if you see our, if people go to our webpage, she does all of the work on our webpages, all of the emails that go out with information. Joanne is the person who primarily does that, and all of our Facebook information, all that, that's all Joanne, and she is she's amazing. And then we also have Kate Thompson, who is our operations manager. And she probably does the most thankless job, because so much of what she does is behind the scenes. But she really keeps us organized in terms of managing our budget. You know, she's the person, one of the things that we may talk about is that we work on a strategic plan, or what is called our five-year plan. And Kate is the person that really keeps all of us on reminding us, or keeps reminding us that we've got these goals and objectives, and keeps us focused on the work that we need to do around that annual plan or that five-year plan. So those are the other two people on our team, and just every member of our team, Matt and Hannah and Kate and Joanne, are just, you couldn't ask for a more, I would say, professional and just passionate group of people to work with.
I tried to get my own bill passed.
Yeah.
And it sounded like what I really needed to do was connect up to the five of you before actually even trying to write that bill up, and then see if I'd done maybe through the five of you, I might have actually gotten the bill passed this year. So.
Yeah, and I think that emphasizes, John, a couple of the other things that we really do well. You know, we talked a little bit about systemic advocacy through education, and we do that by trying to elevate the impact of these policies on people with IDD in front of policymakers. But when we're doing that, we're thinking about the core values of our organization. I mean, what's it all about? And some of those core values are things like self-determination or the right of people with disabilities to make their own choices and decide their own lives. When we look at a law, we look at it through that lens. I think the other one would be community integration and community inclusion. When we're reading laws, we're thinking about accessibility that includes people into the community, deinstitutionalization, closing institutions, or ensuring that people aren't put in more restrictive environments than they need to be so that they're living in the community. Also, services. So that idea of community integration and services is really important. And the thing that you bring up about lowering case management ratios is really important for people with IDD because it will help ensure that they're getting the services they need. So those case managers aren't overwhelmed. And that law that you were working on, John, was really important. And I think it also speaks to the, you know, one of the other things that we do, which is here at OCDD, we try to help grow leaders within the disability community. And you're a leader, John. And I think putting people in positions to be able to advocate for what they care about is one of the fundamental things that we try to do. Just some examples of how we do that would be through like technical assistance and training people on how to engage in legislative work or how to engage with legislators during legislative session. And then, you know, we also do it by inviting people to join the council. The council offers a lot of different opportunities for you to be involved in different groups and to build your own leadership skills yourself.
My advocacy group was recently discussing some kind of leadership program that's supposed to be going on. I think it's like 8 weeks or something like that, if
yeah.
I remember that correctly.
Are you talking about the one that the ARC is? It's, I believe it's 7 weeks, the Self-Advocate Ambassador and Leadership Program. Is that the one you're talking about?
I think so.
We have talked to the ARC about engaging and supporting this in different ways, including providing some of the training that around the legislative advocacy for one of the sessions. There's also partners in policymaking. So I don't know if that's, and I know, but that's more of a, how many months is that, Matt? That's several months, I think, partners in policymaking.
I mean, I think it's a year long, like it's almost a full year. And they usually graduate in the May of every year. So it's a big program. And, you know, those types of community events, those leadership events that bring self-advocates together from across the state are really important for what we do because it gives us an opportunity to listen to what their concerns are. And then we'll have a better sense of how to put them in a position to share those concerns with policymakers. But we also often volunteer to provide presentations or information at those conferences because it's an opportunity to give really timely and accurate information. And that's something that we really want to stress too, is OCDD is a good source of reliable information.
And I got to say, considering that our advocacy staff has tried to read, and I hate to say this, big, beautiful bill and try to understand it and have been having a lot of problems.
Yeah, I mean, the OBBBA is a very complicated law and it doesn't spell everything out in the law itself. There are a lot of things we don't know yet about the impacts of the OBBBA.
And, you know, that kind of leads me to how the OCDD is going to help us through this present administration or present climate with the administration that we now find ourselves in. And also a little bit of a concern that could the president remove the council?
Yeah, so there's been unprecedented things that have occurred at the federal government level right now. So I don't know that I can entirely answer that other than to say that our programs are embedded in federal law. The federal government indicates through federal law, that DD Act, that every state must have a council on developmental disabilities. It would take, Congress would have to vote on changing the law, I believe, in order for anything like that to happen. There was earlier this year a leaked memo from the Office of Management and Budget that was looking at the funding for our DD network partners. So whether it was the councils or the what they call policy and advocacy organizations, which in our state is Disability Rights Oregon, or the USIDs or the University Centers on Excellence for Developmental Disabilities, they were looking at how they were funded and changing some of the funding that would have impacted us. So there, I mean, I don't know that we can't predict the future. I will say that there was a Senate appropriations process that just completed that approved through committee. So there's a number of steps that still have to occur, but approved our funding for fiscal year 2026. Now, it still has to go through an appropriations committee for the House of Representatives, and then it has to be voted on. You know, we could do our own little Schoolhouse Rock video here about a bill, but then it has to go back to the full Senate and be voted on, and it has to go to the House and be voted on. But we're reasonably optimistic that at least for 2026, our funding is going to be secured. And then you just sort of have to, advocacy becomes very important, you know, in terms of being able to talk about what the value of our programs are, our DD network programs. And so we always appreciate advocacy that can be done by members of our community. We can't specifically go out and lobby Congress for our funding. That is against federal law for us, because we get federal funding for us to be able to do that. But it does not prevent people from talking about the impact and the good things that councils do. You know, I think the other thing in terms of in the present climate too, I mean, it's a pretty fluid process, but I ultimately think that as these change, you know, Matt referenced the fact that we don't know everything yet. And I think they're still, even though the bill is passed, I think how they implement some of those changes is still to be determined. And so as details emerge, as things may change, you know, I think what's really important from our perspective, again, we talked about advocacy in the beginning, and that is listening. You know, and it's important that we listen to the people with lived experience and understand that our primary responsibility is to advocate around issues that are important to them, to all of you, and to make sure that we put people in position, you know, that we help to create a bridge or open doors so that people's individual stories and how those things are impacting them or will impact them, both the positive as well as potentially how they could negatively impact people, that those stories and that impact is heard.
Yeah, I think the bigger question of how to advocate in this present climate really relates back to the idea that OCDD is all about getting people involved in the political process. But before you get involved, one of the first things that people with disabilities should think about are what are the services or what are the government assistance programs that are most important to you? And then think about what would it look like without those services and programs? That's your story. It tells the policymakers about your life and the importance of these programs for people with IDD. And then the next step is really contacting the policymakers to tell them about those impacts when they make these changes to the state and federal policies. And there's different ways to do that. You could testify on a proposed law in the legislature during legislative session. That testimony, you could do it orally in front, standing in front of all these legislators. Or if you're not as comfortable with that, you can submit testimony in writing. A good webpage for that, by the way, is to look at the Oregon Legislative Information System, OLIS. That's where they post the agendas for meetings, and you can find out when and where to testify. But there are other ways to get involved, such as meeting directly with your legislator. State agencies are working on rules that implement laws all the time. And there are things called rule advisory committees that people can sign up for to voice how they think a new regulation will impact people with IDD. I think the other thing that I would suggest that advocates might consider to do is sign up for something called the Go Bulletin. The Go Bulletin is a publication that's put out by a very important coalition, the Developmental Disabilities Coalition. And in there, you'll find the latest updates. You'll also get action alerts about bills or policies that you may want to engage with legislators or policymakers around. Also, reaching out to myself, reaching out to my colleague, Hannah Baker. letting us know what interests you. So when those issues do come up, we can reach back out to you and get you involved.
Whoever might be interested in communicating with you all, is there like a website? Is there phone numbers? Do you all have individual contacts? How do people go about, hey, I want to get a hold of the council. How do I do it?
One of the first ways to do that is to go to our website, and you can get our contact information there. We also, on the website, if you don't know who to contact, there is an email that's just info@ocdd.org. So you can also do that, and we'll manage that and figure out who it should go to. You know, another thing I might mention in terms of getting involved is I mentioned that five-year planning process. And so we're right at the beginning of we're at the end of our last five-year plan. So we've got one more year of this plan where we have activity, we have goals and activities that we work on, but we're just in the process of planning for the next five-year plan that'll start in 2027. And one of the ways that we do that, our plan is really based on feedback that we get from our community in terms of what are the needs of the community? What do they want us to prioritize? What are barriers that people are currently experiencing to services? And so that we have a, and we can provide this to you, John, as well. We've been putting it out via email and on our website, but we have a link to the online survey where, and it's very short. It's just a few questions for people to answer about those questions that I just brought up. And so that's one way for people to contribute. And they can also contact us if they have interest in joining the council. Now, we have a specific number of seats. So oftentimes letting us know means you may have to wait till people's terms, until a term is over, and then we can consider applications. But I would never discourage people from immediately applying.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO's loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes